Hello, everyone, and welcome. This session is called The Importance of Humor in an Unfunny World. We have three distinguished panelists with us, and I would like to ask them, I've asked each one of them, to introduce themselves, just a thumbnail of who they are, what they do, but then also, what really, why do they think they ended up on this panel?
Well, my name is Liz Winstead. I am the co-creator and former head writer of The Daily Show. And thank you. And now I run an abortion rights, reproductive rights, and justice nonprofit called Lady Parts Justice League. And I can't imagine why I was asked to be on this panel. No idea. If anybody wants to give me a clue, that'd be helpful.
So I'm Piper Davis, and I'm sort of the longest shot on this panel. I am a partner in a multi-unit bakery business in Portland and Seattle called Grand Central Bakery. And I'm also the board chair of the Chefs Collaborative, which is a national nonprofit which educates, inspires, and celebrates chefs who are trying to build a better food system. And I am here to be on the food track. So the only reason I could think that I was put on this panel was that I said in my interest survey that I am an irreverent loudmouth. And so that's all I can come up with.
That qualifies you. Okay, so this is one of the examples of an actual class that's a part of the CU curriculum hosting one of these panels. So I'm the instructor of record. My name is Beth Osnes, and I'm a theater professor co-rostered with environmental studies. I do a lot of work involving climate change and comedy. And through an initiative that I co-founded called Inside the Greenhouse. So today we have with us, I'm actually co-hosting this, co-moderating this, with my students who are from a class that's called Comedy, a Performance Study. They're upper division, upper level undergraduate students, and then there's one graduate student in this group as well. And we are going to be sharing with you some of the things that we explored throughout our class. We're going to be inviting our panelists to comment on this. We're going to be getting a little bit of input from you, but a lot of this is going to get into the body because that's where comedy resides in part. Not entirely, but should be in part. So I'm going to just hand it over to my students now who are going to start the ball rolling.
Hello. First of all, I would like to establish that the world is indeed unfunny. So, given the average age of our students involved in this class, we have described the modern world as 1995 to present. So...
That works for all of you, right?
So, we would like to ask all of you to give some examples of unfunny things that have happened in the world since 1995. We're going to start off with our three panelists and then get three more suggestions from the audience.
We're going to ask our panelists to write them down.
Yes. Our panelists will be writing those down and holding them up. And the time begins now.
95?
So one of the examples we used in class was 9/11. Seems like a very unfunny thing, although there are some jokes about it. Do we have some examples?
Mitch McConnell.
W. Bannon.
Bannon for the win.
All right. right. Can we get some more examples from the audience?
Trump.
Trump. All right.
Trump.
Sandy Hook.
Carrot Top's whole career. Yeah!
All right, I heard Sandy Hook. I'm gonna make that a little more general and say school shootings. All right, and I heard Hurricane Katrina, so I'm gonna make that more general again and say natural disasters. Examples that we will recall later in our performance. All right, now I'm going to hand it off to Austin.
Oh, that was very cordial. I wasn't expecting that. Thank you. Well, I was hoping that, you know, that was a little bit of the priming. I was hoping the more class would come later, you know.
Subliminal messaging. Now
taking all these things into account, all these awful, unfunny things that have filled, you know, our world from 95 until present, you know, we know everything on this list. It's not entirely our fault, you know, per se, though the millennial generation certainly does get a good heft of the blame.
And so through this material that we're working with, but we want to offer you an apology. And
more so specifically, we want to offer you a formal apology and a photo opportunity. If our panelists could hold up these unfunny things for us, it'd be much appreciated. And so we would like to stand before you as a formal
attire apology
for an unfunny world. This is the photo opportunity. All right, that was enough dead space.
All right. Now, rolling up on next, I'd like to invite our next classmate, Danny, to take over the microphone.
Ooh, this is going to be fun. All right. We also stand before you as people who believe in the importance of humor in this unfunny world. We would like also to stand before you as veritable athletes in the effort to bring humor to this unfunny world. I'd also like to invite our next speaker, the man of the stage, Garrett.
Absolutely. I had a terrifying dream last night. That I had to stand in front of an audience in just my skivvies. All right. So, in this class, we've been studying quite a lot about comedy. But even then, that only scratches the surface of everything there is and everything that's funny. Naked people are funny, for instance. So we'd like to take this moment to kind of talk about what we've explored with our panelists and with you and give you something that you'd like to comment on. We'd like to give you something that we've been exploring in class that you can discuss with the panelists and with yourselves and make the group out of it. And that's the next person that I'd like to introduce is Beth once again for this exercise.
Thank you. So we really started out in our class exploration of looking at humor as it resides in the body. So we wanted to introduce you to some expert that we were able to bring along. I know there's a lot of distinguished people here at this event, but we brought along Dr. Scientifico, who's going to come and join us in center stage here. Dr. Scientifico, please. Can we bring him center stage, please? Doctor. 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 There you go. Oh, this is embarrassing. Dr. Scientifico, I would like to introduce you to the stage to help us really examine the body, the human body. Specimen you can get up on the table over here.
First of all, where does it make noises? Where does it make noises?
Mouth.
Is it mouth?
Yeah.
What else?
Fingers.
The fingers. Yes. What else? Where else? The stomach.
Oh.
Kind of. What else?
The butt.
The butt. I concur. Where else? So that is where it makes noises. Now, oh, good one. But the
yeah.
That would be a surprise. That's the mouth too, though. But if I do this, stop. Now, where does it smell?
Mouth.
Does it smell in the mouth?
I agree.
Where else?
Under your arms.
Under the arms. That is true. Where else? The feet. Uh-huh. Content the butt. Yes, I'll give it to you. Where else?
Belly butt. The...
Mm-hmm.
The hair.
The hair. The hair is good. It smells good. Anywhere else? What?
Crotch.
The crotch. Primo. Where? Where does it protrude?
Nose.
The nose. The nose protrudes. What else?
Ears.
The ears. They protrude. Continue.
The
tongue. Protrudes.
The crotch.
The crotch. The protrudes. What else?
Thanks.
The
feet. They protrude. The tootsies. They protrude. The nipples. They protrude. What else?
Kneecap.
Elbow. Shoulder.
Butt.
Protrusion. This kind of forehead thing going on. The chin. All right.
Nose.
The nose. Where do its appetites reside? Where is it hungry?
Everywhere.
Right here and right here. Does it have any other appetites than just the food and the sustenance? Any other appetites you can think of? The crotch. Anything else? The heart? The heart needs love.
Broken.
It's a broken heart. Where does it leak?
Oh.
The eyes.
The eyes. Broken heart. Leaky eyes. What else leaks?
Nose.
The nose it leaks.
Sweat.
The sweat it pours.
Oh dear.
Oh, my bad.
Don't cause more leakage than necessary, sir.
trying.
Anywhere else, any leakage? The ears, they leak. The pores, they leak. This stuff down here, the nethers, they leak. Where is the human most vulnerable?
Oh, dear.
What will kill me?
The abdomen?
Yeah.
The neck.
The neck. Look.
The ribs?
Oh.
The crotch?
Oh.
The eyes? The head? The heart?
It's already broken.
The knees? Breakable knees? The toes? The testicles? The fingers, they break? The nose, it is broken. Since we are all forced to reside in our bodies, we all have anxiety over the vulnerability, smells, noises, and vulnerabilities, and the foolishness associated with the body. Releasing that anxiety through humor can be very liberating and can lighten our load.
Thank you, Dr. Scientifico, for your service and your human specimen. You guys did a great job. Now I'd like to turn a question to the panelists. What do you guys think about the nature and the importance of physical humor and physical comedy, things interacting with the body in an unfunny world?
Happening to Ellen here?
Ellen's having a breakdown. I would have to say that in an unfunny world, finding humor within that space and trying to look at, like, I'm a believer that you can take any topic, any of the topics that we said, there are bad people who have created the situation that you can satirize and make fun of. How you pick your targets is super important. So I would actually say that verbal communication in an unfunny time to expose the hypocrisy of the people creating the unfunny times is more important than the physical.
I love absurdity. My favorite photograph for the month of April, May, June, July, August, and September, and I hope some of you saw it. If you haven't, find it. It's a picture of Jared Kushner in the movies wearing a blue blazer, khaki pants, and a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, you can't write it better than that.
You can't unsee that. And he's surrounded by military men in full camouflage, and all I can think of is that they were probably stifling what was just happening to me a little bit ago. They had to have been amused as all get out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of all sorts of humor, and I think that I think there is something about the complexity of the times. Yes, since 1994, all sorts of bad things have happened, but there's something sort of dark about today for me. And wherever I can find humor, I want to. I think that I like all kinds of humor, but the thing about the physical humor that is kind of fun is that it's really base and it's really emotional, mm-hmm. and it's not as complicated as satire.
It's also an escapism, you know, like there's responding to the dark times and the negativity, and then there's taking a break from it through absurdism and physical humor. So I think that's also super important. So it depends on how you want to deal with it is like, what's your drug of choice in living in these times?
I'm taken to associating the people that I just love most intensely with the characters I like most. And I think of Sean Spicer, and I think of Elmer Fudd. I think of Steve Bannon, and I think of Pigpen from Peanuts, and so on. I think of Mitch McConnell, and I think of Meryl the Turtle.
Well, also, just as we were filing into this panel, speaking of humor in an unfunny world, Sean Spicer, if you haven't seen it, just gave a press conference and actually said, at least Hitler didn't use gas on people. I am not shitting you. I tried to actually say it out loud to a fellow panelist, and I was laughing so hard because it was like dumb times 150 about, like, I don't know what he thinks is happening, but I'm not sure anybody was thinking there was a kinder, gentler genocide in Germany.
Oh, my God.
So this panel is very apropos of the ever-changing landscape of our ever-unfunnying world.
The unfunnying of the world.
It's hard to stop that.
I know! I'm like seriously thinking I might be unemployed momentarily. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you, guys.
Unbelievable.
So, So we also studied various theories about comedy. One is the release theory, which I think is like the most common when you're like nervous somewhere and like you get this giggly humor. Maybe it's an awkward time at like a movie and it'd be really inappropriate to laugh, but then you start doing it. I'm a kind of a culprit of that one. But that's release theory, basically. Whenever anything gets tense or anything like that, and you release laughter. And then Beth is going to help us with an exercise that will explore this theory.
So this idea of cleansing out our system from built-up tensions is something that has been explored. We'd like to explore this by going back to the list that we created at the very beginning together. And I'm going to offer it up to our panelists if they'd like to participate in this, and if not, I have my team of students back here, so it would be wonderful to hear from all of you, though. We'd like to pick one of our topics that is unfunny, and then we'd like to offer it up first to our panelists, to just speak a rant on that subject for 1 minute. Okay? I mean, somebody in the audience who has a second hand. Do you have a second hand on that watch? Can you time it with seconds? Well, okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Great. So we're going to have someone, if you wouldn't mind, do you mind holding up some of the things that we chose? And does anyone from our panel want to rant for 1 minute on any one of these topics? Did you just volunteer, Ellen?
I'm volunteering, Ellen, and Liz will knock it out of the park.
Okay, great. So what I'm going to ask you to do, so Ellen, do you have one that you'd like to choose, or would you like to see the list that we created?
Natural disaster.
Yeah. And your challenge is just to talk about it as a rant for 1 minute. Do you feel comfortable? Do you have one chosen?
Oh, it belongs to Katrina.
Great. And are you timing it?
As soon as she starts.
And go. Great.
I cannot believe that friggin' Army Corps of Engineers. I cannot believe that. Come on. All this time I've been going to church and getting down on my knees and saying, hey, man, upstairs, they say they don't believe in you. I believe in you, man. Do something about this storm. Come on. Enough already. Well, and where the hell is the ladder? Wait a minute. Does anybody know how to get up on this goddamn roof? What do you mean? What do you mean we never had to get up on the roof before? We got to get on the top of the roof by now. Uh-oh. There's a guy. And he's coming by and he says, hey, can I help you? The storm is coming, the water is rising. You better get in my boat. And, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't know you, man. I don't need your boat. I'm going to die. God's got this covered. We're going on. We've got a thing going on here. So pretty soon, the water gets a little bit higher. And finally get the ladder, and I'm up on the roof. And the guy comes by in a helicopter and says, hey.
There's your minute.
For those of you who are familiar with improvisational comedy, you know this is a classic improv game. I would like to now ask Liz if she would take, not opposing, but just a different perspective point of view on this same topic and rant on it also for 1 minute. But a very different perspective approach from what Ellen took.
I think that we all know that storms are God's way of punishing our godless, lesbian-worshipping country. And maybe if we would all come back to loving people that don't make sense at all, and hating those who love people who they love, we wouldn't have these rising storms that happen constantly. And why on earth does anybody think that a God that is loving would want people to love each other? I mean, that is the most unchristian thing I have ever heard in my entire life. So those of you living near water, around water, and need water, and use water in your daily lives, maybe you should reevaluate your life and look to the hate the Lord has given you.
One of the things that we explored in the class is that comedy often holds kind of a double meaning. A pun is a pun because it has a double meaning. We just did an exercise that brought out two different meanings on something that was very serious and very consequential. And yet there was comedy within our consideration of this event. I'd like to turn it over to our panelists and just try to help us unpack this. How can this be? What is the nature of comedy that it allows us to kind of crack open something and see it in a different way?
I mean, for me, I just did a classic example of what I said earlier, which is, who are the people that are just the bad actors in a time that is really horrible? And anybody who would blame gay folks or Muslims or anything for a natural disaster because it doesn't fall into a worldview that makes sense, I believe you can tamp that narrative down with ridicule. And then I think if you break it down, it seems nonsensical when you actually use. Often, I think everything I said was said by someone who was like held in esteem of a group of people. So I think that, you know, we're lucky enough to be able to now live in a world where there's some really great people who are doing some really great work breaking some of the stuff down. But sadly, we have a media and a bunch of people who look at ratings as a way to promote like this alternative facty world that can create a lot of this really harmful stuff.
Well, having been black all my life, let me tell you that we have survived on humor. We, I think, are among the most resilient people in the world anywhere because we can laugh at almost anything. And if it hadn't been for humor, all through slavery, post-slavery, and God knows now, we just couldn't make it. And so for a lot of us, a lot of our white friends are going, oh my God, what are we going to do? Trump is over. And we're going, yeah. Uh-huh. Ain't new to us. It's new to you. And the wonderful thing about that is that there has come out of it a unity. Those of us who were involved in the civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s are joined with the people who were not, who never thought this sort of thing could happen to them. And I think together we're going to make a difference. God knows, I hope we are in 2018.
I'm going to come at this from a little different perspective. When you think about sort of like why we crave humor or why humor is important, I don't know if we want to call it important during dark times, I almost wonder if it has something to do with our deficit of being able to really handle the complexities that are involved in those dark times. And the way to like tease, the way to tease around the issue is by making fun of it. And that while I'm a big believer in the making fun of it, I also do think that there's room in our society that it might be something to think about is how do we really get down and process this stuff? I mean, you know, it's kind of, the Daily Show kind of did it for us, where it went from comedy to serious, or, you know, where I stopped watching the news and started watching the Daily Show. But there's still, it's still an interesting thing to me that we can't, we kind of don't know. It's like, it's kind of like how we don't know how to talk about divorce to our children, and we don't know how to talk about how grim the world is in a meaningful way.
So our, if you haven't noticed, our protocol here is that we're doing a few like exercises to spur on the conversation. So the next exercise that we'd like to do that we think will really bear witness to the class process that we've gone through, and that will also bring out more conversation with our panelists, is a game that we created. So we looked at political comedy, and we read the play by Dario Fo that is called The Accidental Death of an Anarchist. And it's about an actual event that occurred in the 70s where an anarchist was supposedly committed suicide out a window of a police station, and all the evidence goes to point that he was pushed out of the window and actually killed. But it's put forth as an accidental death. And so Dario Fo, he won the Nobel Prize from Italy in literature, wonderful commedia dell'arte style comedian, very physical, very witty, very, you know, very language-based in his comedy as well. But we read that play, and then we wanted to come up with a comedic game that would get at a lot of the things that were in this play and in the subject of political comedy. So we came up with a game that is called The Tyrant, The Free, and The Shackled. And I'd like to invite the class. I think sight lines might be best if we go over here. Do you guys want to go over there, everyone? And Colin, you might be able to see for this.
Okay.
So, just saying.
Nolan,
can I stop you there? So, well, no, actually, we should do Danny. Danny. Yeah. Danny is going to start out as, well, no, I'm going to have Nolan be the tyrant. He looks like one. Okay, come here. Nolan, come here. We're going to put this in the back of your, right here. This scarf that I have here represents the hypocrisy, the corruption, the thing that Nolan, as the tyrant, does not want to have exposed. Okay, Nolan, go join your group, please. Okay, you go to the end. Okay, so the object of this game is for the free. Everyone else is the free. I'd like to have two free people volunteer from the audience as well, so we have audience participation. It gets a little physical, so if you want to do this, just know what you're up for. I need two volunteers who want to be the free. Anyone? Okay, come be the free. You're ready to be the free. Your colors work with the group, too, so that's really good. One more person want to be the free? Actually, that's good. Will you guys move that mic out of the way so you guys don't get in the way of that? Okay, great. So, great. The way that this works is Nolan is the tyrant. He's going to physically not be able to move his neck. He only has a limited vision because he's a tyrant. His movements are very restricted. So show us how you can move, Nolan, that you're only your arms and can go up. His movements, as far as movement, he can't run or anything like that. He can kind of move like a squatty thing. He's really, really, very restricted. Great. He is going to be, the rest of you are the free. Your goal is to take the, and I might actually ask a few of the students to step out because we might have too many people. The goal for you is to try to expose the tyrant. Okay? If he touches you with his hand, you become shackled. Will you guys, Morgan, will you show us what shackled means? You get shackled. Great. So if he tries to just put his back against the wall, you can try to hold a revolution. If you count to five while his back is against the wall, then you've succeeded in your revolution. So we're going to just do the game to see how it goes so that you can see this as a physical representation of political comedy of this play. So go. So, Morgan was able to get it. Well done. We might need to take a few people out. So, Danny, Colin. Did we just have one of the shackled get the expose him? That's fantastic. Great. Everyone's back to being the free. Let's have Nolan. Will you be the tyrant again? Set him up again. Great. This time, when you expose him, will you please all try to throw the thing that you've exposed, this hanky, back and forth without him being able to catch it, and to really flaunt this exposure. Okay? And go. She won again already. Ah, great. So then in the course of the game, Colin would then need to be the tyrant next. He would be made the tyrant. Okay, great. So one of the things behind this idea, thank you so much, you guys, thank you. One of the things in terms of pedagogy was to really physicalize this exploration of political comedy. What is it trying to get at? What is it trying to expose? What is it trying to communicate? So we used this participatory game in order to try to do that. We'd like to hand it over to our panelists now and ask all of you, what do you think of this idea of trying this relationship between the physical comedy and then the more intellectual, you know, a play that is written, a piece of play, a piece of literature, a comedy show like The Daily Show or something like that. Where is that relationship between the physicalization of it, that manifestation, and then the more complex, deep meanings behind them?
Cookies?
I mean, maybe the question was worded.
I can go, but I feel like I'm just doing all the talking. So for me, it depends on how the physicality, does the physicality or the physical comedy manifest itself into helping you learn something more about that person's horrible policies? You know, it's like, I can't help but think in the modern world when we're talking about appearance, what we take on for somebody, what happened in this last election, where we had so much sexism, so much about Hillary, what does she look like? And we all know Donald Trump is orange, but what does that tell you about Donald Trump? You know, John Boehner was also orange. Two very different
oranges.
Oranges and political and political problems. So I think when we look at the physical, I think that is it informing you on the person that you are satirizing and what they do and their policies? If it's simply buffoonery, I kind of put that into the camp of like a late night monologue joke sometimes maybe will be a little bit more less in depth, you know, than it would be a rant from John Oliver, let's say. So I think that it can play a role done well. I think done poorly, it can just be a surfacey thing that's basically just an ad hominem attack.
We all thought that Chevy Chase's pratfalls were hysterical until he injured himself. And then we had to rethink finding pratfalls of that nature amusing. So what makes that happen?
I never rethought that. I'm not a nice person. I still thought it was really funny. I'm sorry. It's just true.
We laugh at... Okay, I laugh at... the person's walking down the street, and we've all not done it, of course, but we've seen it happen. The person who's walking down the street, texting, I'm walking to a pole. That's funny. Remember the YouTube video of the woman in the mall who was walking through and fell into the pond, the fountain, and nobody knew who she was until she decided to sue the mall, and everybody knew who she was. So she was really dumb.
Great, great. I have to put a shout in for, we have a professor on campus, Peter McGraw, who studies the benign violation theory towards comedy, and that it's funny until, but it has to be benign to be funny, so it's like, if somebody actually gets hurt or if there's actual, you know, violation.
I mean, I can tell you that one of the greatest moments of that was we launched The Daily Show in 1996 during the Dole-Clinton campaign. And Bob Dole fell off of a platform. Do you remember this? And so when the videotape came in, at that point we didn't have YouTube or anything. And the videotape came in, we're in the writer's room and we're watching the video and we're like, please don't be hurt. Please don't be hurt. Please don't be hurt. Wipe out. He's good, we can do it. So, like, literally, like,
you are like,
comedians are horrible. You realize that we're terrible people. I mean, it's like...
So one of the questions from the audience is, with Trump in office, modern satire seems to be focusing heavily on the news of him and his administration. Has this made the role of the satirist easier, or has our realm of relevant satirical content begun to shrink?
I would personally say this is the hardest time to write, because when you can write really strong satire, it's usually based on like a philosophy of someone's, right? Since Donald Trump seems to not have any like core values, it's really hard to satirize his core values. So you're satirizing his weird gaslighting of people and his just bizarre made up shit, and it comes so fast that it's hard to, it used to be that like I do this big year in review show every year in Minneapolis, and I do a live stream out, and it's really fun. And it used to be that like there was 30 great stories and I could break them down and it was awesome. And now it's like it's tweets every 10 seconds. It's every person he surrounded himself with. I mean, the incompetence is so profound that like every single cabinet person is the last person any sane person would choose to run a governmental agency. I mean, Ben Carson, a brain surgeon who's performed his own lobotomy. I'm all nearly positive. Is running a department that he actually like was like, I don't believe we should actually have housing that is like fair and equitable. I mean, Betsy DeVos has never been in a public school except to hunt grizzlies or whatever the hell she said.
And Rick Perry is heading the department that he couldn't remember the name of when he
got. Yes. So I mean, it's like it's endless, but it's also like terrifying.
Yeah, because they satirize themselves.
Yeah.
They don't leave a lot of wiggle room for people to
go. That's true. Very true.
It's true. No, very, and again, I'm finding myself being the serious person on this panel, but the fear of this is that I myself I'm just becoming desensitized to it. Like I don't even take, like I can laugh and not even like I've forgotten about Spicer's comment already. Like it's so, there's so much that you can't actually process enough. And I mean, maybe we need like, you know, political curation needs to be the next big thing to do for us.
I think a $1 million idea would be a nesting doll of incompetence, and you just start with Trump and go down the cabinet. Like it's just Trump, you open up his Pence, you open up his Paul Ryan, you open up his Tillerson, just go down the line of like, because that's what it is. We have a nesting doll of awful.
And that
is like
what Russian doll. It will be a Russian doll.
Yes, this is why it's like, exactly. Crazy.
So a student put forth a question. I'll read the question verbatim. I think it's funny that no adult in the room could say anything about crotch. It's weird that we can talk about something we all have and should feel comfortable about. Or is it weird? So that was a question about the
dick.
I just
we have an adult.
I mean, I just didn't, because in improvisation, that's always the first place you go, is like sex humor or dick humor. And so for me, it was interesting to see how you elevate to the next level. So for me, yeah, the first thing I thought of was, yeah, your dick, whatever. And then I was hoping that people would say other things, and they did. So it's not about, for me, being ashamed. I mean, I'm the abortion comedian, for God's sakes. I'm hardly afraid of anything. So I think that, I don't know that it was that as much as it was just like trying to get you guys to, we know there's a guy. And I think what was smart about it actually is, here's a guy with just a Speedo on, and let's talk about a whole bunch of stuff that's not the obvious thing in the room. So kudos to like not having that be necessarily the thing we all think of when we think of somebody in a Speedo. I mean, I'm not thinking about his SAT scores, quite frankly. I don't think people are. When someone is standing before you in a Speedo, it's not like, I wonder if that person's going to help me, has jumper cables. Maybe. I don't know.
I wonder how he did on his physics exam.
Yeah. He's brains and beauty, I can tell you.
No, I believe that's true.
Someone else wrote in and said, I liked the phony Italian accent in the routine. And I, you know, the person said they do that themselves, but they've been told that it's insensitive. What do we say? Do we go for the laughs, or is it okay to use an Italian accent? And if not Italian, any others? I hand that to you, panelists, as the police of accents.
as someone who's not particularly politically correct, it didn't bother me.
Yeah, I think, again, it's almost like it's offensive if it's playing on the it's offensive and not good humor if it's playing on the expected stereotype, I think. But if it brings up a different, if it gives us a different view, and it tells the story more effectively, it doesn't bother me.
I always say to everybody, say whatever you want, however you want to say it, and then realize that the second it passes your lips, it's up for everybody's interpretation. And so the way that you do it, people are going to have feelings about it. Can you defend it? Why, you know, think of it to yourself. Why are you doing it? And just realize that your intention, the second it's passed out there, sometimes doesn't matter, and sometimes you don't get to explain your intention. So I'm just like, go for it. And then if people like resoundingly go, I never want to hear from you again, that's like part of the deal. But it's also part of the excitement and the freedom, and in exploring boundaries is what great comedy has always been based on. And so do it, and then understand that it doesn't make you the best friend to everyone.
If we think in utopian terms and we think of like creating this better world, where do you think the role of comedy, especially where we find ourselves right now politically as mostly Americans in this room, and certainly in America, where do we find the place of humor in this kind of working towards a utopia? How do you think it can be used to create this better world that we want to create?
Well, I subscribe to the notion that laughter is always the best medicine. I think laughter, I don't know enough about psychology or psychiatry to understand entirely the dynamics of the release one experiences through laughter. But I think there's always going to be room for it. There's always going to be a need for it.
Well, and it's a way into, well, I'm asking whether or not we're not able to talk about complicated things. I also think it is a way into, I have recently gone to a couple stand-up shows. I've never been to a stand-up show in my life. And I was like, I think I'm kind of a fan. And people are able to say things in a way and come at a problem through a different lens sometimes that all of a sudden makes it, I think it opens it up. It's like a, you know, it's just like a little crack, and then it opens it up, and then it's funny, and then it's serious underneath the funny. So I think that it's in it, and it also will help. It helps us all from just being demoralized when you can see the humor in things. But I think it's really careful to not let it just be funny. Like, it's funny because it's tragic, and it's tragic because it really is bad. And I'm laughing at that.
And I would also just say, if somebody makes you laugh, laughing is the one thing that cannot be orchestrated by like societal norms. Like sometimes you can just be like, have it drummed into your head about body image, about whatever. Like, I guess I like that sweater that everybody's wearing, I'll get it. Humor is literally something that either hits you or it doesn't, right? And so it's the one most organic, natural thing that we have inside of us as people. So when someone taps into that, and that person brings you joy, whether you realize it or not, you like that person. So if you can have humor or bring joy to people, it might be a crack in finding common ground or, you know, finding a place that makes sense. My dad was a really, really, really conservative human being. And it was like, I was like, how do I find a way to connect with him? And we did it through humor, and we did it through watching Jeopardy together. Because I always say, if there's somebody you love that you have a really hard time in political discourse, watch Jeopardy. If you're both smart, you'll both get the questions right, and you can't insult each other on an intellectual level, and it's really helpful. It's my tip to you. And then if they're awful, just leave. But, yeah. So I think that it's like, it's crucial as a tool of humanity. And it lives every single place we're at. Every single place. And like and it's also a barometer of, do we still have hope? If you're laughing, you still have hope.
It's interesting. My brothers and I still laugh about the fact that my father
never picked you up at 6:30. He picked you up at 6:32. He picked you up at 5:27. Or he would have lunch at 1:12. And growing up, over the years, we still do that with one another. We say, hey, man, how about if I meet you at Mustard's Last Stand at 4:23 and a half?
I'm interested also in, when does comedy go too far? When is it inappropriate? When is it just not funny?
That's not up for anyone to decide. When people try to pose that question, it literally is the question that enrages me more than anything in the world.
Sorry.
No, because it's the same thing. Are women funny? Fuck you. Like, seriously, it's like that conversation happens in some stupid think piece twice a year. Are women funny? Yes, they are. Have you laughed when a woman said something? Then there's your answer. Bye-bye. So that question is saying that there's some universal offense or universal humor. You know, everybody is going to have their line of what they don't think and what they think is funny. And to set those parameters would mean that there wouldn't be a Daily Show. Because do you know how many advertisers once a week would try to get that show pulled because of something that somebody who bought the soap or the car or the whatever found a fence with? You know, I mean, we made a shower curtain out of the Shroud of Turin and we got yanked off the air in Philadelphia because somebody complained. You know, there's always going to be something that is going to offend people or not. And so I think the point is, it's the same with not like censoring your enemies. Don't you want to know who the biggest racists are who are out there? I want to know who they are so I know how to fight back. I don't want to silence people because then I'm at a disadvantage of knowing who is walking around being my enemy. And it's the same with comedy. I want to know everything. I want to hear all of it.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Finding humor in Sandy Hook. It was just such a horrific event. I don't know. I have a really hard time finding any way to extract humor from Sandy Hook. Maybe it's possible, but I don't know how.
I would say, again, the bad actors around Sandy Hook, and there are... This is a story that is real and insane. So, I go home for Christmas this year battling what all of us did, which is we just had an election. How do I deal with the relatives who are, I believe, completely out of their minds? I have to deal with a relative who listens. Do you know who Alex Jones is? Yes, so this person is an Alex Jones devotee. And we're talking about that I'm a sheep, I'm sheeple, and that I don't understand the profundity of what's happening. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, you know, you have been fooled by the government's crisis actors. Anybody with me? Crisis actors? So, wing of people who believe that the government hires actors to pretend that these situations are fake. He said it happened in 9/11. He said it was actors hired at Sandy Hook. And then he said, even the Boston bombing. And I said, your first two examples are hideous, but I wasn't at those two places. But I did watch the Boston Marathon, and with my own eyes, I watched a man's legs get blown off. What are you talking about? And he said to me, see, this is why you're a sheep. That man showed up without legs, and they fitted him for blow-offable legs. And at that part, I was like, blow-offable's not a word. A.
All right, there's a joke. Yeah, that's okay.
And B, C, A. So it's like picking it. And there's going to be people that say, where is she going? I'm going to shut down because she's brought up something that couldn't possibly have a place for me to go with humor. But my job, and I think the job of people who are good at satire, is finding the people that exist in the world that marginalize and trivialize and ignore the real places of why these things happen, right? So I think that, when people try to do that for shock value, it's almost always the worst. I mean, they're never good at it. But when you can place it in a cultural context, which we have to talk about our bad shit in a cultural context. You know, James Baldwin said, white people never have to look at their shit. White people, we got to look at our shit and figure out what our role is in all of it. And with, I think the comedians are doing a really good service by saying, white people, let's look at our shit. So.
I say it all the time.
Yeah. I know.
When we look at this challenge of having to look at our shit, when it comes in the context of comedy, how is that different than a critical analysis? What are the differences?
Well, it can be both more critical and the access to it. How many people have seen Get Out? Speaking of white people looking at their shit, a friend of mine saw it and actually was witnessed people laughing at the wrong time. And I guess this has been going on with that movie. So I think you have to make sure that, I mean, but the movie still, it's not, the movie is great, but it's the issue of kind of finding the, how do I relate this idea? But it's got to be good, and it's got to be the right, not the right cultural. How do we even say that? Like, is there a right cultural context? I don't know the language around this topic right now. Like, because what's funny in one context is not funny in another. And when people are ready to take that, so go see Get Out, and then figure out what woke means, and try to, and then talk about that a little bit.
Well, I don't know how many of you saw Straight Outta Compton. But there is a meme that came out of that movie that became international, and it was by Felicia.
Yeah.
Big,
yeah, by Felicia.
By Felicia. And you have to see the movie. You have to see the movie, and you have to see it in context. Now, on its own, it doesn't mean very much. But if you've seen the movie, and if you know the situation that gave rise to it, you understand why a lot of times on Facebook and in comedy you hear the phrase, bye Felicia, check it out.
I also think too, it's really awesome way to, if people don't know, to give them an introduction into it. When I do my stand-up, I like to do a lot of storytelling with it. It's like, do you guys know about this? Like, this is this is a thing. Like, even just telling you about Alex Jones. Like, if you don't know about Alex Jones, I don't care. I'm happy to, like, it's just really fun to get people engaged about a topic that, A, sometimes you feel like you're might supposed to know, and, like, you don't know all the details or you were busy. So it's somebody helping you out. It's like, oh, thank you for telling me that so that I can Google it later and not making me feel dumb. And I think humor is a really good way to introduce topics and keep people engaged in things that sometimes can be, like, really hard deep dives into stuff. You know, Vox is making a lot of really great videos that are explainer videos, and I think that those things are important. I think that people live lives and they're busy, and people also maybe focus on one issue and they know a lot about that issue, and then other issues they don't know about. And I think humor is a great way to, like, bring people into filling them in on stuff so that they're like, they feel cool that they're just learning about it for the first time.
So one of the questions that came in is, what about President Obama? When Obama became president, it seemed that there were very few jokes about him for the first year. What is about this interaction between comedy and respect?
Well, I have to tell you,
protrude.
For me, what I found was really interesting is that when Obama was elected, I was interviewed constantly by the press saying, what are you going to do now that Obama is elected? How are you going to make jokes? And it was such implicit racism. Like, oh, you mean there's a black president, so I can't make fun of the fact that he picked fucking Rahm Emanuel and the fact that he is like already promised he's going to drone people and escalate the troops in Afghanistan and kept on Tim Geithner and fucking all the banksters? Yeah, there's plenty of jokes about Obama, and I made them. But, like, he came from a machine that is broken, and there was plenty of jokes to make, and it was fascinating to me that people didn't know how to talk about a president and were tiptoeing around his policies just because he was a black president. Like, if I was to make jokes about our black president, that's an asshole. If I'm to make jokes about a president that came up through a system and he pushed policies that were crappy, that is my job. Yeah.
Well, and if there was a lack in comedy around the Obama election, I think that some of it just had to do with us, and I'll say it, us white people, not knowing how to act with a black president, not knowing what's funny, not being willing, being too precious and careful, and not understanding it. You know, I mean, I remember when I was a school teacher, I remember one time some kid, an eighth grader, said, "Miss Davis, the black people know they're black." And I was like, oh, huh. Isn't that awesome? I was like using all this language to avoid that there were any differences between anybody in the classroom.
Yeah. Well, it's also, too, it's really, when you look at comedy, you know, all the things I just listed about Obama, those are like sort of big, think hard pieces to write material around. I did it, but it's like hard, right? Where it's like, you know, it's like the first thing you said was his ears. That's like the place to go, right? Boehner's orange. And like, but the reaction around Obama and the racism that America, you know, we knew that there was like just implicit bias, but to have a black president and to watch what our black president couldn't get away with because of like bullshit in our society was great.
Let me give you an example. In one of his first, I guess it was one of his first press conferences or a speech he gave about something, and he walked out from behind some doors and he walked down to the podium and he had that walk. Remember that walk? All of my black friends said, wonder how long he's going to be able to keep that up. And sure enough, he had to modify that walk. If you saw him into the second and third year of his presidency, he didn't have that super cool swagger that we all thought was so hot. He didn't have it anymore. And he was told.
Yeah.
And he did. What makes me craziest is, okay, it's cool when he was our first black president. It's cool that, you know, he made mistakes. He did some good stuff. He did some bad stuff. But he was still just the president.
Right!
And he never was able to stop being the black president. And that's what's crazy making. You know, I have never said in relating a story, I have never said there was this incredible white woman walking across the street who had on the most gorgeous turquoise turban. But if you listen to a lot of white people tell the story, they will say, I saw this incredible black woman walking across the street in a turquoise turban. Does it matter that she was black? Or does it matter that the turquoise turban was super cool? Think about it.
Or that the white woman was appropriating culture.
Exactly. But sometimes I'm actually curious what you guys think. What does the audience think about this? Is that sometimes it's critical to the story. So those details, if they're part of other parts of the whole story, when is it appropriate to talk about someone's physical attributes, and when is it not? It feels like maybe it's a power thing. Like it's. Because sometimes it makes the story better.
Sometimes it's germane, sometimes it's relevant, sometimes it's not.
So if it's germane, then it's appropriate?
You do. And then other people get to decide. You know, then again, it goes back to if you've decided that, then other people get to decide whether or not your decision was right. And that's why a lot of people just go, I can't go into this business. It seems really hard. but, you know. Yeah. But I think that it's a very interesting time that we live in with what it means to have presidents who are not part of the same cloth. Yeah, that we've always had, and what that means for all of it, and also the responsibility we put on those people. So yeah, but until we fix the system, you know, there should be no reason to not talk about anybody who came up with the system to be president. You know, you took money, you made promises you're not going to keep. It's all crap, and here we are. Unfunny world. Unfunny world.
So one of the questions here is related to this. It seems to me that the attention to Trump's bizarreness in so many ways just keeps reinforcing his ego and his importance. Am I wrong?
Oh, I think he's a quintessential narcissist, and I think he's probably, however unconsciously, subscribes to the notion that no attention is bad attention, no publicity is bad publicity, and it goes right past his head. The fact that here he is past his 100 days, and he's still talking about the bloody election. He's still talking about Hillary Clinton. He's still talking about this crowd at the inauguration. Stop it.
He's a mess.
Yeah, that's funny.
But no, but I do think that I think we're all in a place, well, I can't say we're all, maybe people voted for Trump, I don't know. I think those of us who can't believe people voted for Trump you wonder when is going to be the time people wake up, right? Like, will it be this weird thing? Will it be this weird thing? And so I think there may be this thing within us to just keep poking the bear to see, because you want people to wake up so badly that you're like, make him say something so awful that then people will wake up. And I don't know, because I feel like that too. It's like, what can I do to Donald Trump? And I actually don't know, because I also feel like the people who are not willing, who are not offended by anything he does will never be offended by anything he does. And so we are offended. But the larger, weirder question for me about Trump is really, who are the people that can't cop to the fact that they voted for somebody who is that guy and that they're co-signing on it every single time? I mean, I just feel like that to me is like the most unfunny thing of the world we live in now.
Well, as baffling as that is, I think it makes sense when you think about the division and the people are like, oh, I'm a moderate, I'm in between. It's like, no, we are so red and blue right now, and people are so conservative. Like this morning, went for a hike with my friend. I don't know if Sylvia's here. She was like, when we went with another neighbor friend, and when we left, Sylvia's like, oh, I said you were fine. Thank God I didn't tell you, but she's our Republican friend. And like, I was not told to, but it became clear that it would make a socially awkward situation if I was my general loudmouth liberal self. And I think that that is what, maybe there's a role for humor to start doing that, because right now people who are, like I, it would take, if Donald Trump had ran as a Democrat, it would have been really hard for me to vote for Jeb Bush. It would have been, I would have trusted still. Because of the division, even though I'm so pissed at the Democratic Party right now, I still trust them. They're my party. I was raised by to be a Democrat, you know? And I think that our like team allegiance is so strong right now that we're willing to forgive anybody on our team anything because they're on our team.
I couldn't have voted for Donald Trump. If he had said, Ellen,
I didn't say I would have voted for Trump. I said I would have.
If he had been a Democrat, if he had been the embodiment of Clark Gable, if he had been.
But there's just no way Donald Trump could ever run. I'm sorry, Ellen, I interrupted you.
No.
Go ahead.
No, I mean,
as a Democrat, you can't not pay your workers. You know, like there's just things that people wouldn't have.
Yeah,
you can't grab somebody by the, you know.
But the point being that once you've decided and defined yourself about who you are and what party you, what football team you root for, what party you're part of, most people, well, first of all, less than half of our population didn't vote, and most people just go down and check what the Democratic Party has said, and everybody else should get vote by mail like Portland does.
I need to put the, I'm so sorry, I'm being asked to wrap up our amazing, I want to do a shout out to our panelists for being a part of this. I also want to do a shout out to our students who are students at the University of Colorado.
Yes, good job, guys.
This is their campus. Thank you for having us here. We thank you for bringing. They also wanted to express their gratitude. One, two, three. That was their gratitude. So there we go. We thank you all so much. We do want to ask everyone if you could just stay seated for 2 seconds. Ellen has a really tight connection to make, so we're just going to quickly allow Ellen a clear path out. So maybe use that door over there if you wouldn't mind. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.